think DeSantis was in town last week.
No.
You don't think he cut a deal with DeSantis?
I don't know.
There we go. Did you record all that? No, I turned it off.
Thank you.
Nice. How are you, sir?
I'm great. So, I sort of have a hard stop at 3:15.
I'm hoping to be done by 3.
That'd be good.
Is it okay if we begin?
Oh, yeah.
And I have, I put together just some talkers
for
you.
Tell me what to do.
Okay.
It always works better that way.
Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to get started. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you to the members of the board who are joining us here today. For the record, my name is Michael Kane, chair of the State Workforce Innovation Board. Some quick notes as we begin the meeting. This meeting is being recorded. Before speaking, please state your name. I'm Michael Kane. State your name. Sorry, I lost track. State your name so the transcription service can accurately document today's meeting. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. Meeting materials for the board and the public can be found by visiting the New Hampshire Works webpage, which is attached. Again, today's meeting is being recorded. We have a number of items to work through today. You'll find these items on your agenda with the enclosed support of the documents. The agenda and these documents have been provided to the board electronically last week. Printed copies are available today, and all materials were made available to the public via New Hampshire Works website. Joe, would you please call the roll for the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Albers. Jim Alden.
Here.
Thank you. Joseph Alexander. Kevin Avard. Rick Bartle.
Here.
Thank you. Christine Brennan. Joe Brown.
Here.
Thank you. Anya Brzezinski. Kelly Clark.
Here.
Thank you. Kenneth Clinton. George Capatis.
Here.
Thank you. Adam Crapo. Bruce Crocheter.
Here.
Thank you. Mary Crowley. Thank you. Tyler Eaton. Patrick Fall. George Hansel.
Here.
Thank you. Cynthia Harrington.
Here.
Thank you. John Hennessy. Lisa Hinson Hatz.
Here.
Thank you. Candace Hyde.
Here.
Thank you. Michael Kane.
Here.
Thank you. Justin Cantor. Shane Long.
Here.
Thank you. Donnelly Lozo. Lori Ann Lundgren.
Here.
Thank you. Larry Major.
Here.
Thank you. Ashok Patel. Jim Prue.
Here.
Thank you. Shannon Reed.
Here.
Thank you. Tim Sink. Gary Thomas. Mr. Chairman, with the roll call completed, we have a quorum.
Great. The meeting minutes from the October meeting are found in your packet. If there are no edits, I will accept a motion to approve the minutes from the February 7th meeting.
I have a couple of points.
Great.
This is Shannon Reed. I think, first of all, Mayor Joe Brown's name is throughout J-O-P. It's supposed to be J.
Rush to E.
As far as I know. And then second, on page 19, there's some things that are, said by you, described to me.
Okay. Yeah, we wouldn't want that to have happened.
No. Thank you.
With those edits, we can. Thank you.
Great. So, should we get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Great. Second?
Second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Everyone who's massively opposed to this? Okay.
And for the record, the motion was by Mayor Brown, and the second was Rick Bartle. Great. Thank you.
Okay, I would like to welcome everyone here today. My name is Michael Kane for the third time. It's great to see you here today. I appreciate you being here with us. As I know, everyone's schedules are very busy. We have a full agenda and lots of information to cover, so let's get started. Now, do I just keep going?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We would like to take a moment to see if anyone from the public would like to provide any public comment. If so, state your name for the record prior to speaking. Great.
I have one thing to ask. We have a special guest from the U.S. Department of Labor, two special guests.
Oh, great. Okay. As an aside, I wanted to welcome Amanda Poirier. Did I pronounce that correctly? Thank you. Sorry, Amanda. And Tamara Warner from the U.S. Department of Labor. Amanda is temporarily filling in as the State of New Hampshire's Federal Project Officer. Thank you, Amanda and Tamara, for making the trip to New Hampshire, and welcome.
We're happy to be here.
Okay, we start our agenda here today with some informational items. These are reports and updates provided to the board. These do not require a vote. However, if the board members would like to make motions, I would ask that you please wait until the next section of our agenda. Excuse me. Please remember, before speaking, to please state your name for the record. Joe, could you please guide us through these items?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. We're very happy to present to the board a participant showcase. We try to do this every 2 years. At every board meeting, we provide updates on metrics in terms of performance, participants served, how we've served them. We talk a lot about numbers on spreadsheets, but these are the folks who we serve, and this is what we're here to do. So we think it's fun to provide, you know, the human element for you all. So gathered here today are our program participants. Their bios and a little bit of their stories are in this packet. Again, this starts on page 61. So correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, we're going to have folks introduce themselves and then tell us a little bit about themselves and then open it up to questions.
Joey, you want to get off and introduce?
Absolutely. We do have one participant who could not make it today. Don Peter. He's very excited. His wife is pregnant, and just a little change in schedule. So he's priorities. So we're very happy. Congratulations to him and his family. But he will not be joining us today. But you can see his story. In the packet. So we're going to start with...
Joe, sorry. Lisa Gerard again. We do have one other substitution.
Yep.
Gabriella from my turn was not able to make it. So Autumn is representing my turn. So her story is the additional page that is not in the packet. Melissa handed it out.
And I believe we're starting with Dr. I'm sorry, who? Yes, please. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Hani Jamie. Thank you for having me. I was born and raised in Iran. I am married. I have two daughters. My wife and I were well established physicians in Iran. We decided to move to the United States to provide better educational opportunities and freedom of choice for our children. We moved to the United States in February 2017. after the moving, we realized that we have to improve our English language skills to be able to get better job opportunities. First, we came to one of the local ESL classes named the Holy Cross Center in Manchester, New Hampshire. And after that, we involved in IIND, International Institute of New England. And we referred to Southern New Hampshire Services, where I met my career counselor, Jeannie. And I enrolled in WIOA program. Do you want to explain anything?
Yeah.
Sure.
We
can keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you end up doing in the program?
After the enrollment, we needed to participate in advanced English classes, and the New Hampshire, Southern New Hampshire Services, WIOA program, paid our tuition to be enrolled in Manchester Community College for two English courses, one for speaking, listening, and pronunciation. The other one was for essay writing and vocabulary. We completed both courses and get the certification. Also, I received some financial help for my examination because I wanted to be a physician in the United States. It was a long journey and complicated journey, also expensive. I received some financial help to pay my examination. And I passed all of my exams. There are exam that made USMLE in the United States, which is the abbreviated United States Medical the United States Medical License examination. It has three parts. I passed all of them, and also an English exam, OET, occupational English test. I passed it, and finally I certified by Educational Commission of the medical graduates of foreign medical graduates for CCMG. They offered me a certification that is equal to MD. I got it on January 27th, 2022, and officially I became the medical doctor in the United States.
Yeah. I believe what Kimberly is, or are we going to go in that order? So Carly, would you mind sharing with us a little bit?
Carly Becker. senior at Manchester Memorial High School. I'm 17 years old. I've lived in New Hampshire for about 10 or 12 years. I moved here from Maine. And I've been with the job program for about 3 years now. I was introduced to it my sophomore year. The job is really helping a lot. Like, as a younger, I would have bounced around a lot. Like, even in New Hampshire, I went to like 5 different schools before I finally settled down into like one district and stayed there. So like with that, like it kind of helped me like grow roots into a place and like actually like look into careers and job opportunities and colleges and stuff like that. So like one of the biggest things Jack has helped me with is getting into college. I am enrolled in at Anna Maria for my fall semester. I graduate next Saturday, actually. And they've helped me so much with applying for my FAFSA and other scholarships and just making sure like my schedule for college is up and out and everything like that. That helped out so much that I will not have to pay for my college. So I have it all paid for, all set out, and it's a big stress reliever, which is what they're helping with a lot. Going into JAC, I didn't really know what like I wanted to do. I had a broad aspect. I knew I wanted to be in the healthcare profession, but I didn't know like exactly what I wanted. So with Mr. Cannon, my JAC teacher, they kind of like sat down and had conversations of this profession and that profession and whether or not I would like it or not, and we kind of came to a conclusion where I'm interested in being an anesthesiologist, so I'm going for my health science degree in Korea. And like, it was kind of like an eye-opener with Jack, because like everybody I've talked to, teachers, parents, peers, brand new people, they've always been like, college is the way, you have to go to college. But like with Jack, like it was not like, there wasn't like a stigmatism, I guess, with like, oh, college is the only way. Like they were like, oh, well, if you don't want to go to college, they give you other career paths, and they like opened up the door to like things that I like really haven't like experienced before. So it was really nice, and like it just really helped me a lot get through like high school, especially with COVID being a thing. Hybrid learning and online learning is definitely not for me, so having that outlet to go and talk to and get help with schoolwork that you can't really reach out to your teacher for, it's really nice.
Awesome. Thank you. And Autumn, would you mind, and thank you for filling in last minute, and welcome.
I'm Autumn from Rogers as well. I'm 22 years old. I live in Manchester. I'm 3 years old. So as a juvenile, I had a difficult relationship with my family, and I ended up being in prison. At the time, it was very rough, but looking back at it, I would have benefited. I think I got that goal from the sense of family that I was in. Which means that I have more advanced at that time, it was very rough. As I got older, I struggled to find a way to be able to help without any support. I was forced to be very independent for the age. That has motivated me as a mother to create a life for myself. And after spending some time in the shelter, I found my first apartments. Also in Manchester, around the time, my best friend told me about this program called Mentor, and I enrolled about a year ago. I worked with Mentor to find a career goal. I'm also on the NHP program, and I've spent about 20 plus hours a week at my office working on my life skills, personal finance, resolving some court issues, doing career education, participating in the Youth Justice Steward program. I've received support services to cover my utility, car payments, any support that I needed at all. I've met with many of the staff members at my turn regularly and decided to enroll in the aesthetics course that I'm finding usable and sick. I just graduated about 2.5 weeks ago, and will be taking my state board test in July. With my turn's help, I was able to secure an office space and launch my own company called Follow Love Aesthetics. This summer, with the reopening this summer, my turn is helping with my LLC paperwork, purchasing items that I needed to be successful in my business and growth. and once I graduate, I think that the best part about being able to do my TRAN program is the fact that I have some support network at all times with any needs that I needed, even the kind of things that I didn't even know that I had access to support in. And even on nights and weekends or off days or on their own time, they've taken the opportunity to help with resources. If you would have told me at 22 years old I would have been a much newer business about a year ago, I wouldn't believe that. So I'm very grateful for all of you who choose to support from my friends and make the journey future. Thank you.
Thank you. Kimberly, would you mind sharing with us?
Sure. My name is Kimberly Griffith, and I had been an employee of a medical home clinic in Manchester for 37 years. I started there right after, actually, my internship before I finished college, and then started there a week later. They had multiple roles throughout that time, starting out as transporter and family worker, and on to my last role was manager of community services. In about that, my mom, who I was her sole caretaker, and she's living with me, getting quite ill. So I needed to go on FMLA to care for her. And when my time was over, they said I needed to come back to the office full-time, 40 hours a week, and this was not possible. And I was doing remote work before that, with the pandemic and all of those kind of things, but regardless, they said that was my choice, and so I was forced to resign. I did that, and I spent the next 6 weeks with my mom, who ended up passing at that point. They also told me that I wouldn't be eligible for unemployment because I chose to quit, which is not true. But I had never been without a job, and I believed them, so I didn't search for, I didn't attempt for unemployment, but then things, finances got a little bit rough. Also the only income in my household. I was convinced, what does it hurt to just try and apply? And so I did. And that ended up in the Manchester Unemployment Office. And it was a struggle, but ultimately, because they of course fought it, but ultimately I was found eligible. And so I went on unemployment, and then I was, I really thought, oh, this will be easy. I'll be able to get a job. I have all kinds of connections in the community. I've been a social worker for all these years, and, I felt like I had a really good job, a really good position in the community. But lo and behold, once, I kind of had everything together, and I started to look and all the jobs that I was searching for, and where everybody at this point wanted you to have your master's. I only have my bachelor's with 7 years experience, but that wasn't enough. And on top of that, having not really had to look for work or my last one was on a typewriter. all of those kind of things, I was really lost. And so I got connected to the first, it was a person, I'm not sure, but she ended up referring me to the WIOA dislocated worker program. And I found Anne incredibly helpful, and she was able to help me, you know, create a resume and this whole, like, you know, you don't just drop off your application and your cover letter and everything in person, you know, you just send it online, and setting up the, you know, JMS, all of the fun that that system is, and your resume and your virtual recruiter and all of those kind of things. And again, I went on multiple interviews, but again, that's not something I had done in a very long time. So she was very helpful in the, okay, let's kind of role play this, and, you know, and these are the kind of things that most people are asking these days. And I also needed her help to kind of discuss why I was unemployed, because for me, it was really triggering. And so she was helpful in that as well, and like what to write on the, you know, like, you know, I didn't want to write, I was fired. So then we went back and forth, and I applied for all the jobs that I like thought I should according to my career, and then I said, you know, really, like, I've used multiple computer programs and things because I did reports and grant writing and grant, you know, all the documents that you need to and everything, and medical software and all those kind of things, but really, like, just my Word and, you know, all the simple things that everyone wants you to be up to date on. Everything I did was a program that, you know, we all use, but it was specific to the agency. So with Anne's help, I was enrolled in the ONLC, Microsoft Office training program. And so I, you know, did some training, and of course, at that point, the laptop that I had for a number of years decided to die, and then my brother talked me into getting a Chromebook. Well, Chromebook doesn't work with all of the Microsoft products, and so then I was having to travel back and forth to the training all the time because I didn't have computer access. So then she introduced me to the Get It program, so I was able to get a laptop to have all of the correct programs, all of those things, so that I could, you know, still attend the training classes, but have the ability to work home from it. So all of those things were very helpful, and then I decided that, you know, that maybe I needed to look at other positions, and was, you know, what about this, what about this, and you know, and all of a sudden we were looking at multiple things, and the Employment Security came up, and I'm like, oh, that's not really a social work job. She goes, oh, well, of course it is. You know, it's just a different aspect to it. And she goes, well, you've done case management, you have done resource connection, all of those kind of things. And the more I looked at it, I was like, well, yeah, I, you know, that's true. I mean, a lot of the things she was referring me to, I had done work for my clients over the years, including, you know, unemployment applications. And so I first interviewed for a Manchester position, but it was only part-time, and I needed benefits because, again, because I've been out of work and all this, and it's the first time in my life I didn't have insurance. But then the opening in Concord came up to do at the National Plant Experience to be actually the WIOA facilitated worker, case worker. And so I applied for that, and I was given a position, and here I am, 5 months later.
Thank you, Kimberly, and forgive me, sir. I'm Ruslan. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Please, would you mind sharing with us?
Yes. Hi, my name is Ruslan. I'm from Ukraine. I have three small children, two boys and one girl. My family and I came to America under the U4U program. We moved to America 8 months ago because, you know, a war broke out in my country. I worked as an electrician. Since we had no experience in America, we were connected to this program to help us adapt and get the necessary knowledge that will help us find a job. I received financial aid and guidance and attending the journeyman electrician program offered by the New Hampshire School of Mechanic Trades. Some supportive services that we receive are help in getting the tools for the program and help with applying and financing the program. I met both virtual and person with my career counselor. I knew what job I wanted, but my career counselor helped to see if I qualify to attend the program. After speaking with my career counselor, I decided to choose this education program. The biggest benefit of this program is the ability to attend my training program and have a chance to get a job in America. In the career that I know best, I helped me financially and with my certification in my career. And a few days ago, I received an offer from the company. Thank you for this program and the people who helped me adapt and find a job over the course of 6 months. Special thanks to Amanda and Joanna for their efforts, support, and contribution to our development and building our future in America.
Mr. Chairman, is it okay if we open it up to the board for questions for
Absolutely.
The participants?
You bet. Any questions? Oh, yes.
Joe Brown, doctor, and I'm not going to say your name. I read through your story, and I was amazed, for your tenacity. And going through 7 days a week, it sounded like 365 days a year, and that it also impressed too that the training that you did have in Iran, obviously, I was pleased to see you didn't have to go through like another 5 years of medical school or something with that an area that you already are expert in, and I think it's kind of a testament to all of the people here that have those kinds of programs that allow professionals to not reinvent, recreate themselves, to do exactly what they were doing just in a different country. Mm-hmm. And so kudos to you for that. I was really impressed. I think you all have done a super job. I read all your stories. Great going to college, that's fantastic. On a scholarship, that's wonderful. Opening your own business, oh my God, that's incredible. I hope you get your results back faster than some other people have. So I've heard it's been taking a little bit of time to do that. Tough to start again after 37 years. Oh my gosh, that's incredible. Great for hanging in there. Super, super job. Hats off to you guys from the Ukraine. I don't know how you do it. I mean, just to get over here intact with your family and everything, and then jump right in less than a year, you've been able to do all of this, again, speaks to the support that this group and the Manchester provides for them. It's just, all of your stories are absolutely awesome, and it's, in this world where we're hearing so much bad things, it is this good news, is that yes, there are good people all over the world, and we need to support them and encourage them. Thank you so much for your stories today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you for your nice comments, and I forgot that appreciates all of your support, specifically emotional support that I received from Jeannie, my career counselor. I want to say a special thanks to her, and also all of the support that I received from Southern New Hampshire services. Thank you, and I forgot to say that I got an offer for pediatric anesthesiology fellowship in UC Davis, California. And I will start my career next month.
Awesome.
And Carly is going to be in anesthesiology. Yeah. So they're sitting right next to each other. I think that's me.
Well, that's fantastic. I think the thing that inspires me the most is the motivation between all of you, because nothing happens without that, right? So hats off to you guys. It's amazing to hear your stories.
And thank you for coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
I'd also like to thank all the career navigators and the field staff that put in the work. With the individual participants. We have some of them sitting behind them as well. So I'd like to just do a kudos to them as well for all the hard work that they did.
Great. Thanks, Joe. So thank you for the record again, Joe Dorian. Thank you to the participants for coming. Really do appreciate all that you've what you've given up today to come and speak to us today, but also a huge shout out to the folks sitting behind, which is staff from, we have Southern New Hampshire Services, we have New Hampshire Jobs for America's Graduates, My Turn, Employment Security, who operates our Dislocated Worker Program, and the International Institute of Northern New England, who is one of our VIP partners along with Southern New Hampshire Services. So we have a really great team here in New Hampshire. I think we do it very uniquely. You know, I'm of course saying that to the Fed, with the Feds in the room, and we do it cost effectively and very well, might I add. Getting ready for that audit in a few years. But seriously, thank you to the partners and the participants. So we can't do it without you, so thank you. With that, we go into less. So you all can go and enjoy the very nice day. We're going to be stuck here in this room, so feel free to take some food on the way out, especially, and enjoy the rest of your day. So thank you again. And I believe we have a presentation on, Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong. Yep, she's hugging. And Mr. Chairman, sorry, we're going to go out of order for a second and let Jimmy do a rapid response update as we get the next thing ready to go. Jimmy, is it okay if you go right now, just so we can reset up for the next item?
Sure. I'm Jimmy Henson. I'm with the Office of Workforce Opportunity under the Department of Labor. And this is the rapid response update for the transitioning into the third quarter of this year, which runs from July 1st, 2022 to present, we actually saw a very significant increase in rapid responses from the previous year. When this report was done on the 6th, we were showing 35 rapid response sessions across the state. That has jumped just from the 6 up to 39 just in that time. And those total 25 more rapid responses than we did last year. To give you an example, we only did 14 rapid responses all last year. And I would say between February and March, we did double that.
Wow.
These 39 rapid responses impacted about 1,700 employees. Again, when this was written, we're looking at about 1,090 workers. We're looking at logistics, retail, hospitality, manufacturing, environmental services, education, communication, child care, technology, and health care. So it didn't just focus on one, it kind of ran the gamut. Through our ongoing engagement with partnerships and relationships across the state, we do our best to assist people who are being laid off by running the dislocated worker program, WIOA program, and rapid response programs. This is probably the first report where I'm able to say that without a doubt, the layoff activities that we have been able to do, I can securely calculate 158 saved jobs going into this year. These are businesses we work with. We convince them to talk and work with us, our DDD partners, to ensure that the layoffs are as minimized as possible, as well as all of our NH workers and employee security partners. So I felt really comfortable. I hate throwing out numbers without having solid things to back it up. 158 is pretty solid. We're going to continue to do rapid response services across the state. While our federal partners were required to do this for 25 or more, we still don't care if it's one or 25. We'll act in the same manner, putting forth our best effort to get these people back employed. And for the record, we are doing all of these in person now, but we still have things online and can do Zoom as a backup if needed. And that concludes my report.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thanks,
Shannon Reed. You list among the sectors, the industry sectors that had some rapid response activity, you list healthcare. Can you talk a little bit more about that? We keep hearing that healthcare is a field that's with people in great demand, employees in great demand. So I'm curious as to what's shrinking or what.
So in healthcare, it's an interesting phenomenon. So during COVID, in order to keep employees, they had to pay them an extreme amount of money, and in some cases more than the average. Now that customer usage is going back to a more routine base, the money that they were able to make, seeing a high volume of customers compared to a medium or a standard number now, isn't as much. As a result of that, you're starting to see people consolidate, because rent has gone up, logistics has caught up, everything has kind of gone up around that. So as a result, they had to make cuts somewhere. A lot of times they end up cutting the medical staff and you're seeing the fewest people. I was really shocked by that myself. But on the reverse side, we work with our NH Works and employment security partners and we find the jobs really quick. So, I mean, that's one thing that I can't really capture for whatever reason, getting those jobs automatically in there.
I mean, I can just say on the unemployment side of the house, I mean, with the benefits that we're paying out about 2,500 people a week. That's it. I mean, prior pandemic, pre-pandemic, it was over 4,000 a week. So the numbers are really, really low as far as the number of people collected. I've even had employers call me saying I've hired three people. One person showed up till cigarette break. Left. The other two never showed up at all, and I've told them, give me the names. I want to check something, and those people weren't collecting. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think some of them are doing gig economy, and others, you know, I'm not sure what they're doing. But
I know they're getting jobs.
Yeah, they are getting jobs, no question.
Thank you.
Otherwise, it would be reflected in our numbers of the weekly pay.
It would be.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jimmy? And we're going to go back to 2B because we were anticipating some tech issues because that's what always happens with a presentation. So we beat expectations. Great job, Lisa. So take it away, Lisa.
Oh, not me. Oh. This is all Matt and Henry.
But she resolved the tech issues.
I'm just the screen mover ahead.
So without further ado, my name is Matt Russell. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm the Director of Workforce Development for Southern New Hampshire Services. Today, Henry Harris, the Managing Director for the International Institute of New England, and myself will just be taking a little bit of time to provide the board with an update on the BIP's workforce program initiatives taking place here in New Hampshire. And as I'm sure many of you will remember, I think it was around this time last year, in the early spring of 2022, that the Department of Business and Career Office and Workforce Opportunity has released an RFP for the vibrant, inclusive, and prosperous workforce program that will come to know as the VIP Workforce Program today. So just, you know, to revisit that in a nutshell, I think the spirit of that RFP was to try to increase the number of historically marginalized or systematically marginalized individuals to help them gain access to some of the life-changing services and activities that are available in the existing WIOA adult program. So ultimately, the Office of Workforce Opportunity has moved forward with two different contractors providing services for the VIP project. Southern New Hampshire Services, the existing and longstanding WIOA adult operator, was one. The other was the International Institute of New England, which many of you probably recognize them as being, you know, the leading refugee resettlement agency here in New Hampshire. I guess I'll back up a little bit. You don't need to jump the slide back, but just while having like a side-by-side comparison of the two different providers, I would just say that, you know, there are some clear similarities between the two initiatives. I think there's some distinct differences between the two proposals. And I think as time goes on, we're identifying that there's a lot of common ground there, too, where there's a healthy amount of collaboration when we're really working together to make a pretty good difference here, too. So I just wanted to mention that before I jump ahead. I'd like to start by just providing an overview of Southern New Hampshire Services proposal, kind of talk a little bit about what it entails, what our approach is all about, and then start to take a closer look at some of the impact we've been able to have thus far. At this point, you'll see on the screen, and I can't see them from here, but each of these were the target populations that were identified in the original RFP that was released. Southern New Hampshire Services proposal, we kind of elected to cast a wide net of people. It wasn't a situation where we felt like we really wanted to focus in on one, two, or even a few of those target populations. We felt like it was in our best interest to try to, again, cast a wide net and see if we could create new partnerships and pipelines with any of the organizations that are working with some of these particular target populations. So just a little bit more about Southern's approach. I would say that you know, Southern staff that's working on this project, it's kind of a mixed bag. We have some new outreach workers that we were able to hire up to be part of this project. And we're also utilizing some of the existing and most experienced WIOA adult workers that we have at the agency. So really kind of a blend there. I'm going to say our approach, it's not rocket science. You know, I think ultimately we have a small team of outreach workers that quickly work to identify a hit list in some ways, or a target list, various organizations and entities and businesses that are working specifically with some of the identified target populations. From there, we're really taking a proactive approach to just go ahead and try to get the conversation started, arrange meetings to meet with those, you know, specific entities to talk a little bit more about the WIOA adult program, the vast menu of services that are available, and the ways in which they can
you know, really help to provide a tremendous benefit to the participants that they're working with, along with the new source of funding through the VIP initiative, which allows for more in-depth levels of technical assistance and support to be provided to try to work with folks through, I will say, an aspect of the program that tends to be an area where we see the most falling off, which would be really around like the application process. I'm mindful of the fact that we have some Fed reps in the back of the room here. But you know, I think in many cases we do talk about the fact that it's a federally funded position, and with that, you know, there are very clear federal requirements that we need to abide by when operating the program. And I think that in some ways, I think, you know, the program application can be somewhat cumbersome. You know, there's a lot of documentation that is required in order to be able to make an eligibility determination. And unfortunately, I just think that is where a lot of applicants tend to kind of fall off there. So with this, you know, the additional VIP funding, you know, our goal is to really, at that point, tap into some of our existing WIOA adult staff that are very well seasoned on all of this, and really kind of stop and provide more in-depth levels of technical assistance to help them secure all the documents, work in the application, don't get off track, you know, really be there to hold their hands through the process. What we've been able to do, too, is have more of an on-site presence at some of the organizations that we've created these new relationships with, to be able to provide technical assistance on-site at their location, in some cases off-site at a Southern New Hampshire Services Resource Center, but in most cases right at the New Hampshire Works offices statewide. I guess one thing that I do want to take a moment to acknowledge would probably be the fact that I think over the years, the state of New Hampshire has probably taken, in my opinion, too much of a conservative viewpoint on the adult program's eligibility criteria. And I just give credit where credit is due to Joe and his team at the Office of Workforce Opportunity. I feel like, you know, they took a close look at some of the federal T goals and policies and procedures, and were able to kind of, I think, quickly realize there is some untapped flexibility that is there, you know, and by adhering to, you know, a much more, you know, stringent interpretation of some of the eligibility criteria, you know, I think it really does leave a lot of people on the outside looking in that unfortunately hadn't been able to utilize the wonderful services that are available in the program. So I think, you know, just being a little bit more flexible in that regard has really allowed more and more New Hampshire residents to be able to take advantage of some of the services that are available. I think there's a connection there too to the successes that we've been able to see with outreach. You know, in years past, I hate to say it, but you could easily find yourself in a situation where you connect with a new entity, spend some time educating them on various workforce programs that are available. You start getting some of those referrals that come through, and unfortunately, not eligible. It's like, you know, that really is a situation where I think it can do more harm than good, you know, and compromise credibility, and again, just, you know, kind of destroy some of the momentum you may have otherwise had. And I feel like today, some of those changes and, you know, the additional outreach that's being done, I feel like we're in a much better position to be able to have a yes behind, you know, some of those referrals and be more inclusive, you know, and help people gain access to the program. In the interest of time, I won't take too much of a deep dive into this here, but as you can see on the screen, what these figures represent are the individual target populations that we're working to try to create more pipelines and partnerships with. And just providing some of the figures through the first three quarters of this initiative. But I will highlight the fact that, you know, there are duplications in here. You know, there's certainly going to be many entities that are being picked up in multiple pods because they are working with, you know, a diverse group of people. Access to the applicants. I will kind of go through some of these figures if I may. We have to look at the big board for this one. But essentially, this is providing a little bit more information about what type of impact we've been able to make. So with all of the different organizations that we've been connected to, there's been, again, through the first three quarters, 202 potential applicants that we've been able to connect with, spend a little bit more time working with them to discuss the services that are available through the program, discuss the labor market information, trainings that are available, and just to try to create some enticement there. Of those, there were 178 that did express an interest in enrolling in the program. 118 were provided with technical assistance around the application. 129 had been referred to a career navigator, and ultimately there were 108 completed enrollments that were directly related to the VIP initiative and the work that was being done by those folks. Go to the next slide. I know that that's not necessarily an overwhelming number when you see 108, but I think it's important to provide some context around that. The annual enrollment goal for the adult program is 260. So to get an additional 108 enrollments through the VIP efforts, I feel like it does speak volumes. I really do. And to look at the impact on the adult enrollment year to date through the first three quarters, you can see that 260 again is the target goal, but there were 388 enrollments at the end of the third quarter. I think at the halfway point of the year, we were actually able to exceed the annual enrollment goal. So, not earth-shattering numbers, but certainly a sign of success that we're happy with. There have been 308 individuals that received occupational skills training through the adult program. And this, again, that figure represents 141% of the annual goal. I can go on and on. I think, just as we've been kind of working through this, there's definitely been a lot of additional process improvements. I think continuous improvement is something that we're always kind of trying to keep our eye on. And as we've seen the increased volume of individuals coming through the program, it's definitely forced us to try to come up with some new innovative strategies to kind of keep pace. And I think that the program has been well served for that. That said, I do recognize these are not earth-shattering numbers when looking at the overall workforce struggles that I think we're dealing with here in the state of New Hampshire. Happy to see the program doing well, but I'd be remiss not to mention the fact that I recognize the worker shortages that we have here, are really hitting all nations. That said, I'll turn it over to Henry Mark to talk a little bit more about IIME's overview.
Hi, everyone. A little background about the International Institute of New England. We resettle refugees worldwide. We respond to humanitarian crises like the war in Afghanistan, the evacuation of Afghanistan, and the war in Ukraine. So we get two types of clients. You get some clients like the doctor who came here for opportunity, and then you've got clients like Ruslan who came here running from a tragic war. And in both scenarios, our clients give up everything. But there's a common theme between the panel here, and that was a lot of barriers, but there was motivation. And so, working with Matt and the WIOA program, trying to figure out how our role is really to kind of set those referrals up so that they are meaningful referrals, and we are working closely to make sure that they're really connecting our clients. So we did that in a couple of ways. We know through our case management data that we can do some data mining and we can find out that where people's English skill sets are that are appropriate for WIOA to really hit the ground running in a fast pace. And really looking for where people are in their pay scale so that it's an elevator speech for us to get the motivation from the clients who have been here. Usually for us, clients who have been here in the first 90 days, they're still in trauma. They're not ready for something like yet. It takes them a while to settle, and as we get a year or more into their resettlement, they're starting to see bigger picture ideas, and this program is perfect. So we kind of set that up. Some success stories. We have a very successful LNA program right now. It started off when I first joined the Institute. It was a pilot. We had no idea what we were really going to work on. It's a partnership that has really blossomed, and we've had 100% graduation in the past five cohorts. We are, these are some of of the places where people have lived and employment. And the time has been great because healthcare has been struggling. So this program has really added to that. And we're hoping to expand this model because we catch people early, we teach them English skills to get into the program and follow up with testing. So it's kind of a bookend program. And I think for future expansion, we can take this model and bring it into any industry. We can write the curriculum for it. We can work with WILA. It's a great partnership. And I think there's room for growth and to meet the needs of our businesses in New Hampshire that are facing the aging state kind of moment. 17 out of the 20 have passed the state exam on their first try. Have passed within the two attempts. And usually that's common, but it's been very successful. And you can see that some of them have already worked in the healthcare field, they're back in it now. And then 70%, I think that number might be higher now. I've actually seen it daily since I began the program. So we come a long way, you know, when we see the news, when the story for Afghanistan is unfolding, and just to put it in perspective for this group, when the evacuation first started, Manchester received 87 clients a week of Thanksgiving. They all came within days, hours of each other, and we basically had to scramble. We had no apartments, we put them in hotels, we didn't know what we were going to do. But we were very successful getting jobs in manufacturing, and you know, supported them transportation through the ILO program, translation services. All of that allowed them to get some really high-paying jobs. And as they're coming here with little and with no English skills and no one in the employment field. Everyone was a little skeptical, like, how are these folks going to work? And I got to say, the partnerships that we've created and worked with in terms of employers have been great, even to the point of revisiting how they use a break time to accommodate a prayer and things like that. It's been very accommodating. So just some highlights. Two of the Afghan clients in the world started the CDL training program. That was new for us. We've never really done much with it. I think it's we're starting to see some more traction in that area. There's definitely a need for more drivers. And then we have one client who's very successful with IT, got a job with the Manchester School District. And our Ukrainian friend here today is working on his electric certificate. And I think we'll be able to answer the field.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of sustainability, I think one of the things that has been really nice about the partnership as well, talking about continuous improvement earlier, I think just to kind of take that a step further, how it dovetails with the partnership with WILA and the International Institute, even with the Element for Success program. At the end of every cohort, there's a meeting of the minds, if you will, just to kind of talk through all aspects of the program, what worked well, what were the stumbling blocks. And every time just trying to like refine it and get it, you know, really dialed in so that it can be the best product that's possible. Even just the VIP staff having collaborative meetings on a weekly basis just to talk through what's working, what's not, how can we do better. In the absence of the VIP funding, I think those are all still connections that will have been really fully developed. And I think we'll be in a better position as a whole to try to continue that type of support for some of these important target populations now and into the future. So, it's up to the start.
Thank you. Oh, question? Yes.
Rick Bartle, for the record. Matt, I think this question is actually around the recording for this slide. If you can just go back to this.
Yep.
I guess if I'm reading this correctly, just because this speaks so much to results, right? I come back to the 202, but 178, interestingly, more. So if I sort of follow the progression, if I understand it right, 178 that showed an interest in enrolling, 108 actually completed the process. What do you think, when you guys were doing an internal review of that, what do you think are the reasons, again, you know, I don't want to do this, but anecdotally, that people are not completing this?
To be honest, I think it's the amount of documentation that's required. The application process, I hate to say that, but I do think that, see some nodding of the heads, I don't think I'm probably unique in that. You know, oftentimes we chalk it up as like the cost of doing business. You know, I agree, it's everything but a hair sample and your blood test that you're taking in order to kind of complete the eligibility requirements. But I think that's it. I think that is single-handedly the biggest concern that's slowing down the road. And I think we've made a lot of progress. To be honest, that when I look at those percentages, I might be alone feeling pretty good about that.
No judgments.
That's fair. I know we had our recent New Hampshire Works program. We were talking a little bit about, you know, just trying to get a better feel for the number of people that are interacting with the program. Even if that's just like dropping an email, expressing a little bit of an inquiry. Like, what's the percentage of those individuals that fully enroll in the program? And, you know, we were just kind of sharing some of the data that various programs use. I think we're doing okay. I feel like some of the results that we've been getting, you know, we're certainly not at that 90% range or anything like that, but I go off the rails a little bit. But to your point, yeah, we need the documentation.
Again, Rick Bartle, does this, is this sort of in keeping with your historic sort of understanding of this kind of success rate? I mean, you know, so we're looking at about, you know, what was that, about a 60%?
So interestingly enough, it's over the years, it's been difficult for us to really come up with a true number on that. I feel like in the last couple of years, we've developed some new strategies to answer some of those questions, to really come up with a clearer understanding of what those percentages are before we make it through. You know, we didn't have a great process for tracking people that never really go anywhere, if that makes sense. So now, if I have a person that simply finds my contact information and expresses an interest in the program and drops me an email address to learn a little bit more, like I can dump them into a spreadsheet now where I'm going to track what happens with them, which we didn't always have something like that in place. I don't remember offhand exactly what those percentages are today, but it's something that, you know, it's a new data field that we're trying to peel that out and take a closer look.
Thank you.
And I think some of it, I know for at least our clients, it's kind of making that decision that you're going to do something different, right? Because our clients transition from survival mode to the next step of following some sort of career or something like that. They don't always come out. And so it's some of that is like it's overwhelming, I think. For these refugees to sort of make that decision. Because right now the rents, they're sometimes they're working two jobs, but they're paying the rent, they're getting by. And now I'm going to do something that requires some effort and work on the part, and it's scary for them. But through the coaching and through the navigating, that's where you really kind of build it. You've got to build a relationship with them before you can get the trust just to jump in.
And one thing I would just add too, that's not a final number either. So a lot of those 178 could still very much be a learning process. In some cases, I mean, it's not uncommon for a person to fully enroll 2 months down the road for a variety of reasons, but I should mention that as well. So some of those could still, will certainly be enrolled.
Yeah, that's again, Rick Bartle, the only reason I ask, just thinking in terms of the sort of larger efforts you've got, obviously, there are any insurance program numbers, successful as it could possibly be, if there's a way to streamline the process, provide more assistance, provide more support, whatever form that may take, you know, I think that's the feedback the school is looking for, because it's making the program decisions.
Yeah, and I think that's been nice, because we've been able to go to WIOA for the intakes with conversations with clients, so we already have the trust in them, and then, as we say, people vote for the presentation.
Jim Perma, I'm interested in whether there's a business relationship component. I don't know if we do the board, but maybe that's an obvious question. I look at Russ and I think there's going to be 100 electrical contracts out there. In other words, you'll love to be involved at whatever level, from helping support an education continuing ed job. You've got a guy right as an example. You got to be this electrician, right? This should be there. Are there opportunities for businesses to create a pool for? Hey, you know what? I would, you know, be willing to support somebody that has a background that just needs to be trained up and licensed, say, in whatever field of in the trades in particular. Is there an opportunity for businesses to be involved to somehow be a resource for internships, for financial support, for continuing ed, for licensing, advice? Just curious.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, especially for the mom and pop economy, for, you know, you've got a lot of, you know, sole proprietor electricians and
as an example.
Trades people. Yeah, and, you know, they're probably having a difficult time, I think, through apprenticeship programs, things like that. It's just making those connections and sort of having kind of a form of flow to get people to come to the table.
I would say, too, I mean, it's unique times that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. You know, years ago, you may have looked at a refugee that was, you know, viewing the States, and, you know, it's an incredibly difficult time for them to find an employer that's willing to work through some of the barriers that could be associated with that language barrier. But today it's completely different. I mean, we have employers reaching out quite a bit saying, you know, we've hired this one individual that has limited English, but his work ethic is second to none. You know, is there a way that we can essentially be on the receiving end of all the folks that are coming here? I think that Henry and I have talked on multiple occasions, you know, we get an employer that reaches out and, you know, they come to us with their request, let's say. You know, it's 20 different people on this shift, these are the wages, here's what we're willing to do. And I think uniquely we're kind of in a position where we can ask them to sweeten the pot and to do a little bit more, because there are multiple employers that are all interested in a similar type of approach. And I think that even trying to say, boy, you know, if you could offer up some on-site English classes that we could help with some funding to make possible, you know, that might be what kind of gives you an edge over another employer that has a similar type of ask but is not willing to offer paid on-site English classes, let's say.
Yeah, we're piloting that program at Elliott CMC Hospitals, where they have a lot of English second language employees, and this is a way for them to take an hour or two out of their day come to these classes, but it's going to put them in a much better position to put a higher paid wage somewhere else in the organization versus like just being in, you know, sanitation or something like that. So, what did you think? But yeah, I would welcome, you know, if there's a really bringing people together to talk about getting those kind of qualified
employees. The financial summary. Oh, sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Joe Brown. Just a question. Have you ever looked at all the incarcerated?
They weren't part of the target population, per se, with this group, but under WIA, I mean, they are a preference kind of target population. I think there's definitely been some challenges there, to be honest. But to answer your question quite bluntly, yes. You know, there've been a lot of the county corrections, you know, staff, we were connected with them to be able to, you know, go in to speak with some of the soon-to-be-released inmates that they're working with to just provide more of an introduction to the services. I think one of the big stumbling blocks is being able to time up when those services can be done. You know, for our program, we're not really well-equipped to be able to start any of the services prior to the release. We can get appointments, you know, booked and put onto the schedule for when they do, you know, exit the system. I think the follow through to this point has been kind of tough, unfortunately, there. I know that employment security has been starting to do quite a bit more. The community college, I believe, is doing a lot more in that space as well. I think they're, at this point in time, probably more at the forefront of some of those more innovative and new initiatives that are taking place. But it's something we're always screening for.
Thank you.
Fire away.
Mary Colley, just back to the previous question, is there a specific way that employers are to contact you for those referrals? You are
only
My goodness, they've got a unique way of finding my personal, or not my personal, my work email address. But to be honest, no, I don't think that we do. We have a pretty centralized email address that multiple staff are always watching. It's, you know, connected to their email address for participant inquiries that they come in. We don't currently have something in place with similar features for employers, to be honest.
Yeah, we do a lot of, you know, vetting for volunteers. It's really word of mouth and kind of block by block that we spread out. And, you know, if we get a successful placement somewhere, we look for someone. So right now, we do get a lot of inquiries that come through. We do have on our webpage general inquiries, and people get inquiries to each other. And I think for our growth, what we're looking to do is really expand the career pathways model, where we can do something similar like our manager, take that model and make it for any direction that we need to, whether it's manufacturing, culinary, whatever the skill set that we're trying to find, but really create. So we're able to kind of pre-test as people come where their interests lie and what direction they may want to go, and there's a clear path.
Cynthia, did you have a question?
I did. So I have a team member that will come to work across all sectors.
I'm sorry. Shannon, I have a question.
It makes sense to refer for them to either businesses that might be that support those programs and, you know, whether it's resources financial with potential opportunities for job channeling.
I think the conversation we've had, so in like the Afghan Environmental Association, the Yellow Lodge, and they were all in the state. And then, like, most of our clients come to the greater Manchester area because transportation is a challenge. So sometimes the employer is like, great, I need 30 people to sign away. Okay, this is going to take a while. I think we're going to have to really talk about how does it make sense. And some of the businesses were so far out and remote that they wanted our clients to relocate. So that's fine, you can do that, but it's hard for a new arrival without those support services to lead our case management team. I don't have the infrastructure to go statewide necessarily. So just kind of having a realistic conversation that, like, let's discuss all options and the initial wave, we had a lot of employers, because that was during a very dark time where there was a lot of people just not working. So they were like, okay, the urgency was we couldn't keep up with the amount, because the infrastructure takes the partner with the employer, and you really have to hunt it down. It's not just dumping people in, it's making sure that the people are putting in those systems, that's the interest. Otherwise, it's not going to work. But I would love that opportunity to make some more connections.
I have slight reservations, and I hate to say that. My only concern would be, sometimes when you have businesses reaching out, like Henry said, you know, I think I'm really careful about putting ourselves in a position where we don't overpromise and underdeliver. You know, and I don't want employers to have a false sense of hope that we have thousands of people that are just sitting and waiting for the call, you know, to be deployed back into the offices, so to speak. That would just be my only reservation. I feel like sometimes we do get employers that they track me down, you know, and they want to talk more about what we're able to provide them with. And when they realize that we don't necessarily have 40 people that we're not a staffing agency that just gonna send people over like that, I think we're more of like a talent development system. And we're working more with like those individual applicants that come through the program to get the training that's gonna put them on a pathway to easily compete for some of these good jobs. And I think, you know, the employment outcomes for those folks have been good. During different times, I would probably say, oh my God, you know, we desperately need some of those connections to build up our placement rates. You know, but I think just the training itself that we're providing participants with, that's the piece that we need to provide. So I just wouldn't want to establish a false sense that we're the savior for some of the worker shortages, if that makes sense.
I can't see your name, but...
George Hansel.
George, sorry.
George Hansel. Along the same lines a little bit, what are the steps that could be taken? Are there any sort of longer-range plan to spread this out geographically throughout the state? Or would it be possible to partner with the other CAP agencies that are doing similar? No one's doing exactly what you're talking about here, at least in that acquisition. And I know that there's a lot of will from employers and folks to start engaging in this type of activity. We're sponsoring like one Afghan family. So it's not happening at any kind of scale, but I'm wondering if there are any plans or thoughts about expanding, because I think there's definitely a supportive community out there in the rural parts of the
country. I'd let Henry speak to that more directly. I know that it's certainly something that's been discussed on many occasions. Henry, I don't want to speak for you, but I know there were some considerations around like isolation too. You see resettlement initiatives occurring in certain areas of the state, and even the gentleman you're referring to, it's kind of an outlier, right? And I think that that's something, and again, I'll defer to Henry on this, but isn't that something that they try to avoid a little bit, just to try to keep some of those communities intact?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard for, we've looked at it, and I think we potentially will have to kind of look at other communities to figure out what you mean. There's a lot of opportunity, we just don't have the infrastructure out there. And so, when I first started 2 years ago, I was staff 14, and now I'm staff 44. So it grew quickly, and our board is sort of saying, like, all right, what's your next 20, you know, what's your strategic plan for the next 5 years? And there's certainly growth, but the housing shortage is still really big. So even out in some of those rural areas, there's not a lot of funds. So there's opportunity, but housing's tight. And so the sponsorship model is still kind of coming along, and it certainly has some advantages, but there's been also some challenges too, because people are doing that as well. You know, they're doing that as well. So we're kind of working on those things. I would be, we're open to discussing that. I just had to slow my role in terms of, we already took on another site in Manchester, one of our partnerships, and recently two of them. So I had to sort of control my role. That's how I came to it.
So the WIOA services are available, so I think some of like the advanced, you know, collaborative initiatives that were discussed here towards the end, those do tend to be more in a centralized part of the state. But the adult team, I mean, we're still actively overlooking that region. I know recently we're trying to strike up some new collaboration with the Ontario Adult Dynamics, the Teen Adult Education Program. I know that they had identified an employer around the border that had over a dozen, I believe, of individuals that they were looking at potentially enrolling into the adult program, and seeing if there was a way for us to be able to maybe do some more work to support them with additional English classes. But unfortunately, that was one that was crushing to our team as they kind of, you know, took it to the next level. It was decided, unfortunately, that there was no way that those individuals would have been eligible for the program. And again, we don't run into that as much these days. But in that particular situation, I know it came back to me and said, but the effort is different. That one didn't work out, but I think the effort will most certainly continue to try to do more.
Great. Oh, great. Sorry.
Rory Lundergan. So just, I have a quick thought and then I have a question. So my first thought is, it sounds like all based around this room, you have a lot of people who want to help both programs. Or, you know, so my big question is, what can we do to further help? What would our next step be if it's just each one of us reaching out individually? That sounds like it's a lot of undertaking on the both of you. So that would be one first question. And the second is just an idea of, it sounds like there almost could be a repository or a network of employers throughout the state who may want to receive maybe a call for help versus having everyone go to you individually. Again, that's just a massive labor undertaking. But could we create, or could someone help create a network that when you do need help from someone, you can put it out? A lot of bigger corporations in New Hampshire are going under DEI initiatives. Our largest employers are really looking to diversify the workforces that we have and provide that opportunity for inclusion and equality. So is there a way that, again, there could be some sort of repository or network that, rather than us saying, like, who do you have for us, how can we help, and can you bring the messaging back saying, right now, here are openings of what we're looking for, if you think you can help particularly here, reach out. So I guess one's a idea, and one's more about what can we do right now, not right now in this room, but how can we help you achieve what you need to do further.
I like the idea. It's one to give further thought. That just the way my mind works.
Yeah.
I like to mull over that during my drive home.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, and I don't mean to have any sort of, like, this needs to be decided right now. Just something that's rattling around.
Yep. I'm going to be careful with my answer to the second one. But I'll just throw it here. I mean, I think when you picture being a small state, it's a really good company. You know, there are times where I do say, I wish we had more money, we could grow this even bigger, you know, more staff, more support, you know, and I think it just increases your reach and your ability. As a relatively small state, we have a lot of limitations, you know, and I think look at our staff right now working, again, these aren't earth-shattering numbers, but the staff are working double duty to try to get some of these numbers, you know, they really are working really hard. Shamelessly throw that out there, I suppose.
And should I shamelessly throw it back at our Fed rep?
So,
I think
if there are no more questions, Joe, would you keep us moving on the informational stuff?
Absolutely. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. So, the next few items, we're happy to answer questions of staff. We're not going to go through them bit by bit, but we're happy to answer any questions. Item 2D is found on page 74. As you're turning to that page in your packet, just two kind of staffing announcements. One that I got the word just a little bit ago, the state of New Hampshire moves very slowly with everything, which is great. But if you notice, Nora Noble Christoph is not here. She applied for a job way back in the day with the Foreign Agriculture Service. There were 500 applicants and 20 spots open, and she was in the top 10. So she is now going to be working in embassies across the world, making sure that, you know, a Creative Oranges is a Creative Oranges, and dealing with complexities of trade policy and all that sort of stuff. So, as a staff, we're very sad that she left the office. We were hoping that she would be here for one more meeting so you could grill her on financial stuff. But alas, the feds decide to move very fast. Whoops, sorry. I forgot the audience that's here today. And so Nora is no longer with us as an office. We're sad about that, but excited for her future. We now have a free place to stay, though, as staff. We told her that we're going to go and stay with her, especially Paris or wherever it might be. So looking forward to that. But Barbara Shea, who has been our youth program specialist for the last 2 years or so, has an extensive background, will be slotting into that role. The position change was effective on Friday. If you notice, Barbara isn't here because she's in Ireland right now. I'm hoping she comes back. And that's a trip that she had planned because of COVID. It got pushed back. So that's where Barbara is. But on top of that all, Barbara Shea, that opens up her youth program specialist position. We're very pleased to announce Melissa Salmon will be assuming that role in a week or two. So just wanted to announce a few staffing changes. So if we could give them a round of applause, new changes. So we're excited for Barb and for Melissa, but here we go hiring again. So just wanted to throw that out. So congratulations, and it's awesome, some really great news, well-deserved changes. So item 2D is a financial summary. You'll see that the numbers are laid out there. Please note item 3C, when we go into voting items, there will be a vote on the allocation of funds. So between Lisa and I, if there are any questions on item 2D, we're happy to answer those, Mr. Chairman. Not.
Any questions? Thank God. No.
and we're also very thankful because it's a language that's better spoken by Barbara. So, so item 2E is a performance update, which is, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, Lisa is happy to entertain.
Great. No more questions. Let's keep moving.
Item 2F, you'll find reports from the three standing committees that we have. So Education and Training, Workforce Development Policy Subcommittee, and the Review Committee. And we're happy to entertain, between staff and the committee chairs, any questions about items 2F. And that's found on starting on page 80. Yep.
So, as the chair of the Workforce Development Policy Subcommittee, I apologize that I must have missed an email on sending in a report. So, if I could just give a brief update to the group. So, we had actually a joint meeting with Mayor Joe Brown and Rick Bartle, and we had a great presentation from Lisa Gerard regarding an explanation of the current high demand occupations list and eligible training provider process. Lisa discussed the barriers and the way forward with an exception process that providers could use when the program was not listed on the HP or the high demand occupations list. Both of the chairs endorsed the idea of the exception process. So it was determined that we're gonna look at that and take a lead on the approval of any documents and policy changes for that area. And we were going to be bringing this, I think, to the SWIFT at future meetings. So I just apologize for not having a report in there, and I'll make sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, sorry if I could continue on to 2G.
Please do.
Thank you, Lisa. And that success story, so we wanted to make sure that we, as staff, included...
Sorry.
Oh, the awards. No?
No, 2F, the review committee contract updates.
Yeah, the awards.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So the if you would notice on page 82, it's the... we have several items that were approved at Governor and Council on May 31st. We have additional items going before the attention of GNC at the end of the month on 6/28, which is going to be a marathon meeting of like 1,000 items, which I know Commissioner Kapatis is always excited for that in a very warm room.
Looking forward to it.
But you'll see we have a new provider of our CSEP program, Senior Community Service Employment Program, Operation ABLE, which is very exciting. We have contracted with Thomas P. Miller and Associates for the revisions to the state plan. So the October meeting, you'll be spared from hearing a lot from me. You'll be hearing a lot from our consultants with TPMA to talk more high-level strategic guidance about the New Hampshire workforce system. So we're really going to be pushing that meeting for you all to attend because you're this is an enhanced stakeholder board. The next meeting is October 17th. Thank you. And so we have contracted with TPMA. I know pretty much the entire board has changed over. So for like the three or four people who are from previous board, we actually worked with Thomas P. Miller and Associates on the last go around. So what's really helpful there is they know who we are. They've done other work for us, so they know the players, they know who to talk to. We don't have to educate them on our very unique system here in New Hampshire. And then last but not least, Easter Seals New Hampshire, in a partnership with All Youth Count, we will be doing some work with foster children and those who are aging out of the foster and adoptive care network. So definitely a population that needs a lot of services. and support. So we'll be looking at doing more employment trainings and enhanced wraparound services, that sort of thing. So it's a real critical population in need of additional services. So those who are aging out of that foster and adoptive care system, not really having a lot after. So this was part of the discretionary round of grants, and we have two more that will be announced at the end of this month too, but we are not prohibited. We are prohibited to saying it until 2 weeks before governor and council. So I've kept myself out of trouble, which is, the attorney general's office loves that. So that's 2F, sorry, on the last bit. And then 2G is participant success stories. And I'm happy to answer anything about 2G or 2F. I know I kind of breezed through, but I know we have some folks leaving at 3 o'clock and I need you for quorum.
Keep going.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, item 3A for consideration for the board was done, and I'll speak to it a little bit, and any tough questions can go to Lisa Girard. Every 3 years, we have to review our one-stop buildings that the New Hampshire Works Consortium operates in partnership with New Hampshire Employment Security. So we have to travel to each of the 12 New Hampshire Works offices and go through a long series of questions to determine things like accessibility for folks with disabilities, making sure certain certain like tools are there, those who are visually impaired, those who may need language services, making sure certain services are offered, making sure that there's certain signage and all that. It's a very complete wraparound kind of approach. We have to go on site. We have to meet with staff. We have all the different stakeholders from the New Hampshire Works partnership there. And we go through, again, that series of questions to make sure that we are fulfilling what we are federally required to provide. So it is a very long process. We have to do it every 3 years. Thankfully, we don't have to do it for another 3 years. We're happy to answer any questions, but the reviewers were primarily, I know my name is on there, but Lisa Girard and Melissa Salmon from the Office of Workforce Opportunity. We have a requested action for the SWIB to vote to approve the New Hampshire Works one-stop certification review conducted by staff from the Office of Workforce Opportunity, and we have a draft motion below, Mr. Chairman. We're happy to answer any questions the board may have and would appreciate a motion at the end.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Looks like the ayes have it, Chair.
Great.
Once again.
We'll see you. We'll see you all in 3 years to talk about it again. What is good is we get to travel around the state, eat lunch at really great places, but it's a lot of work. All right. Item 3B is what Lisa Hinson-Hatz was mentioning earlier about the high demand occupation exemption process. What we're looking here today is essentially for a waiver to our existing policies to add emerging and other niche industries to our high demand occupation list. Being on the high demand occupation list allows for us to unlock the funding, so to speak, for different training opportunities. What we're seeing is new and emerging industries evolve and grow, and we want to be able to support that. And we want to be very careful that government isn't put in the position to pick winners and losers, so to speak, and that's why the high demand occupation list has been so important, because we look at labor market information data provided from our partners in employment security. However, we want to balance what I just said with being flexible, right? We've heard from a number of industries, the timber industry for one thing. That's a very vibrant population, vibrant industry here in the state of New Hampshire. Currently not on our high demand occupation list due to the small amount of openings. But the openings that exist are really, really great jobs with really, really great pathways. Air traffic controllers, that's a very small niche industry. But as somebody who has flown on a few planes recently, it's very, very important. And also, too, the community college system is providing some new, really great training for that here in New Hampshire, where we can be a hub. So during our normal kind of course of business and stakeholder engagement, we want to have that ability for flexibility. And what we want to create here is a transparent, open process engaging the different subcommittees to allow us to do so. And Lisa, did I do okay?
Yes.
I tried to keep it within 30 seconds, which I failed.
Yes, you did. So this, we're requesting that the high demand exemption process be taken up by the subcommittees. So we would want one subcommittee to look at the policies that we're going to have and help us make the revisions along with the form. And then we were thinking that the other subcommittee would actually do the approval. So we would create a process, and then the approvals would go to the actual subcommittee to vote on and approve. And that way, the Office of Workforce Opportunity is not making a decision on whether to allow the exemption or not. It's coming from the SWIP themselves.
So moved.
Second.
Kelly Clark, second.
Oh, Kelly, thanks. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Let's keep going.
Item 3C is the distribution of funds for program year 2023. Again, we don't have Barb here to kind of speak fiscal, but Lisa and I can try to struggle through it for you if you have any questions that the board may have. And do you have something, Lisa?
Lisa, direct the record. So as most of you know, we need to seek allocations every year for our DUIOA adult youth programs. So the allocations are done through a table. We have received that table, so the allocations have been awarded. So this distribution of funds needs to be approved by the board to actually take that money and allocate it out to our service plans. So there's a lot of explanation about how do we receive them, how do we get them, what do we do with them. That kind of takes up a couple pages. The last page is actually the allocation that we received. We did receive, as Matt has stated in his presentation, New Hampshire is a minimally funded state. Based on our unemployment rates, we have very low unemployment rates, so we get minimally funded. Our allocations from last year to this year across the board went down about 8%, which we expected because we're back around pre-pandemic level for funding. The last few years, we've gotten excess money due to the pandemic and the rise in unemployment. But we're back down from last year to this year about 8% across each program.
Great. Do we have a motion?
We do.
Great. Do you want me to read it? I move to approve the proposed WIOA Title I Fiscal Year 2023 budget as submitted by staff. Do I have a second? Great. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, let's keep going.
Awesome. If I could turn everyone's attention to the yellow piece of paper that's in front of you. So we try to get the packets out as quickly as possible. We have to kill several trees in order to get it done and get it on the website to publicly post. So things do come up. So we have the yellow piece of paper. It's on the New Hampshire Works website as Addendum 1. So turning your attention to the bright yellow piece of paper. So our partners at Adult Education, which is a core required partner for us with WIOA, essentially has asked staff on behalf of the SWIB to look at the processes and procedures for a round of grants that they had put forth. The SWIB does not have authority to select any of the applicants that Adult Education has selected. Rather, this is a check on the process, if that makes any sense. So OO staff looked at the proposals to see if there was alignment with our state plan, which we determined there was. So again, this is essentially a check placed on the process, and staff certifies that the process was in fact followed. Any awards made by the Bureau of Adult Education must follow all contingencies and processes set forth by the state of New Hampshire and WIOA rules and regulations. So it was our job to just take a look and make sure that the process was followed. The stuff that they were doing was in alignment with our state plan, which we determined it was. and we have to bring the motion up today to make it clean and certify that we did our jobs, that sort of thing. And Lisa and I are happy to answer any questions, especially if they're difficult, you can direct them to Lisa.
Great. If there are no questions, I'll move to approve the OWO staff review on behalf of the SWIB as submitted by the Bureau of Adult Education. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay.
And then, Mr. Chairman, we'd come to the very end, which I know a number of people had to leave at 3, so you know we're doing good, and thank you for approving the budget so we can get paid. So we have 3D and 3E as open opportunities for the board. Certainly on October 17th, we'll be hearing from Thomas P. Miller and Associates on the state plan. So, but if there's anything that pressing that the board would like to have on that October 17th meeting, we're happy to take note of that here now.
Great. Do we have any requests? Great.
That's all we have, Mr. Chairman.
We don't have another vote?
No, sir.
Okay. You know, adjourn. Right? Motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Bruce.
Thank you all.
Nice.
Thank you. And meeting end 2:50.